Okay, number nine, this doesn't exactly go with past of child development, but a baby needs to learn to grow through problems. You know, as you begin to grow older, you begin to realize, hey, there's a lot of problems in this world. And you got to realize the purpose behind them and how God can use them. And I would say there that you need to teach every new Christian how to understand trials. He needs to learn Romans 8:28, and how that God is using all things to work together for good. Now, not all things are good, obviously, but all things work together for good. And how God can take trials and build character in our lives and help us to grow, and how they strengthen us and teach us to depend on Him. And number 10, a young child needs to learn to follow directions. Follow directions. And that would be knowing God's will. Knowing God's will. Now, in those 10 things, number 2 through number 6 are just, that's all that is that's a wheel illustration. So you can, you know, put out with the navigators. You know, that's just the basic things that are covered in the wheel. So but 9 and 10, I think, personally, that if you can teach a guy, teach a person three things: how to have a quiet time, how to know God's will, or how to know God's will, how to overcome temptation, how to respond to trials. Those are what I call attitude studies. He'll really get growing. And you'll find that when Paul went through Acts training the new Christians, he taught them how to grow through trials. That was his method of follow-up, because trials build character. Okay, I think it's time we take a break.
I'm still asleep. Wake me up, Jack.
All right, let's go ahead and move right along now into talking about the specifics. What do you do after you get a Timothy? And how do you get a Timothy? What is a Timothy? What are you going to cover? Okay, we've been talking along here just a little bit about the whole process. We want to take a man through penetration, win him to Christ, then we want to take him through basic follow-up or spiritual pediatrics. Then we move into the Paul-Timothy relationship, pace setting. Now, let me distinguish some differences between these two, okay? In follow-up, all it requires is a real informal relationship. You don't have to be real, you know, it doesn't have to be anything official where you're going to be my Timothy and I'm going to be your Paul for, you know, the next 6 months, the next year, whatever. It's just an informal relationship, but in pace setting, it requires really a mutual commitment between the two of you, where the Timothy commits himself to his Paul and the Paul commits himself to his Timothy, and they both say, listen, we're going to get together, you know, for a specific amount of time or so much that, and I'm going to commit myself to you, and I always just spell it out. I always tell my Timothys, I say, now, here's the thing I want to expect from you. I said, I expect you to do the projects. If I ask you to do a Bible study, I'm going to expect you to do it. I'm going to expect you to come prepared when we meet together with your Bible studies and do the assignments, and I'm going to expect you to really be faithful and teachable. And I tell him that he can expect from me that I will pray for him daily, and that I will always come prepared when we come to meet, and that he can count on me 24 hours a day if he needs help. And that is regardless whether it's spiritual or not. You know, if he just needs some help, he's having trouble with his girlfriend, or he's having a problem with his homework, or whatever, I'm there to help him grow. And I commit myself to that person, and he commits himself to me in a more formal relationship. Follow-up is short-term. You know, follow-up may be 5, 10, 15 weeks when you help that new Christian get grounded. But in the pace-setting stage, your relationship is going to last several months, 6 months, a year, maybe even longer, because you've got to cover a lot more topics in this. You've got to really get down and cover all areas of life and talk about all sorts of things, where in follow-up, you're just talking basically about those 10 things that I shared with you. In follow-up, there's no accountability. You don't have to say to the new Christian, now, if you don't memorize your verses this week, we won't meet. No, there's no accountability. He doesn't, basically, you're meeting his needs, and he's just there. You make the commitment to him, but in pay setting, he commits himself to you, and there's mutual accountability. Your Timothy is accountable to you to do whatever is assigned. And in follow-up, a lot of times you just sort of, your curriculum is sort of controlled by the new Christian's needs. You know, maybe he doesn't need to learn about prayer 1 week. Maybe you just need to sit down and talk to them about why he's having so many problems in his family life, and just encourage him, maybe share some scriptures. But in pay setting, Paul controls more of the curriculum. He sort of controls what's going to be covered. And, you know, because he sees different needs in the person and says, well, we better cover this. And also I said that in follow-up, there's no correcting. You know, you don't correct the baby Christian. He can't handle it. But in pay setting, there is an atmosphere of trust that allows for, you know, occasional rebuke. Now, let me just say this. I think you ought to praise a guy 9 times for every 1 time you rebuke him. You don't want to have what I think Chuck Madden calls porcupine fellowship, where, you know, every time you get with Timothy, you stick him. You know, you just, every time, well, here's the list you need to work on this week, you know. If you do that week after week, he's going to get pretty tired and sick of, having you always gripe at him. No, you ought to encourage him and motivate him and give him positive affirmation and really support him in how he's growing in the Lord the majority of the time. And then when he occasionally needs to be corrected in an area, maybe he's not disciplined enough in his quiet time, well, think of a practical project. For instance, I know of a guy who was discipling a man, and this guy was always missing his quiet time. And the guy really wanted to have one, but he was just lazy. And so he said, well, let's think of a little project. And he said, what time would you like to get up to have your quiet time? And Timothy said, well, I'd like to get up at 6 o'clock every morning. And Paul said, well, that's when I like to get up. He said, why don't we make this little project? Let's both call each other at 6 o'clock in the morning and see who can call each other the first as soon as it becomes 6 o'clock. And he said, it worked. He said, for the first 3 weeks, he said, he popped out of bed just like that just because he hated the anticipation of that thing ringing. And, he just got out of bed and would lift off the phone off the hook and call him first, simply because, in fact, he didn't want to hear that lousy noise every morning. So, you know, you can think of little projects to get going. All right? So you want to distinguish between those two in pay setting. Now, I believe that when Jesus was pay setting for the disciples, he did 3 things besides those, you know, what we talked about last night. If you had to summarize all that he did. Number one, he taught them about the Christian life. The first thing Jesus did, he just taught them about life. And number two, he transmitted character. He transmitted character into their lives, and he helped them grow in honesty and in purity and in wisdom and in tactfulness, and, you know, he just worked on them, and it really worked, you know. John, what a transfer of character in his life. You know, John's nickname, John and James, and the apostles, their name were Boanerges. You know what Boanerges means? It means sons of thunder. And they got that nickname because, obviously, they had a terrible temper. They were always blowing up. You know, they were such sweet, lovable Christians that one day they were walking down the road and John looks over and saw some other people who had been preaching the gospel, but he said they hadn't been preaching it. He said, they're not with us, Lord. He said, they must be a foreign group. He said, you want us to call lightning down on them? Call fire down on them? Well, that wasn't a very loving thing to do, you know. And he had a real temper. And yet you read toward the end of the Testament, or New Testament, John's letters, and everybody's calling him the beloved disciple. And, you know, he was just changed to a real man of love. Paul, the real, you know, arrogant persecutor, turned into a real meek and mild man who, you know, was filled with the love of Christ. And, you know, and Peter was the same way. Just a transformation from that, you know, brawling fisherman. And so God wants to change our character. And then the third thing that Jesus did is he trained them in the skills for ministry. What was the first thing that Jesus said to his disciples? Do you remember? Follow me and I'll make you become fishers of men. Now, what's that? He said, I'm going to teach you how to win others. And that's what you want to do here. You want to train them in how to make disciples, how to win others, and how to follow them up. Now, the best tool, obviously, for all that, then, is the Bible, because that's where you're going to get all your material for training a guy. Okay, let's talk, then, about how do you find a Timothy? How do you find a good man? Well, in 2 Timothy 2:2, let's turn there. Let's turn to the second chapter of Timothy and look at what I believe are five qualifications that I look for in a Timothy that I'm going to work with. In 2 Timothy 2, verse 2, and the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also. Paul says, I gave it to you, Timothy, you give it to faithful men, and the faithful men will give it to others, implying other faithful men. The Bible tells us that we are to invest our lives in faithful men. Why? Because if you spend 6 months or a year of your time investing in a person, and then they don't reproduce, they don't go out and train anybody, you've defeated your purpose. So you want to pick faithful men. Faithful people are guys who are going to go on, and who are going to share it, and who are going to multiply. And when I sit down, when I take a Timothy on, I say, now listen, Fred, I want you to know right here from the start that all the things that I'm going to share with you over the next 6 months or a year, I'm depending on you to pass it on. And I'm expecting you. Well, that does two things. Number one, he listens better, you know, and he takes better notes because he knows that if he's going to share it on later, he's going to take better notes. And number two, it forces me to put what I'm going to share in a transferable form and something that can be passed on. So the simpler your Bible study is, the better it is, because really then you can pass it on to somebody else. If it's some big technical theological study, you know, only professors can understand, it's not going to get passed on very much. But if it's in a... That's the genius of Campus Crusade. You know what they've done? Campus Crusade is built on 9 simple Bible studies. And they've taken that thing and put it in those little booklets, the transferable concepts, because they can be passed on and passed on and passed on and passed on. So they always make it pass-onable. And you want to find a faithful man, somebody or a faithful woman, who is going to reproduce and train others. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time. Now, here's a principle, that Jesus spent the maximum amount of time with those who bore the maximum responsibility. Now, you look at that. Jesus had lived here on earth for 3.5 years. And he could have done... do you remember those things I shared yesterday? The 5 levels of communication? Let me just write this down again. Remember, there's 5 ways to get a message across. Mass communication, preaching, teaching, training, and apprenticeship. Life-to-life communication, our discipleship, apprenticeship, sharing from life to life. Now, Jesus did all 5 of these. He did all 5. He went out and fed the 5,000. That's about as mass communication as you can get. And he preached, you know, he communicated to the thousands. Did Jesus preach? Sure he did. Preached the Sermon on the Mount. He was preaching in the synagogue and all over. Teach? He taught. He taught lessons all the time. He taught the crowds. He trained. Who did he train? He trained the 70. Remember, he trained 70 and sent them out? But he discipled 12. Now, see the difference? He trained the 70, but he discipled the 12. He didn't live with these 7. He just taught them what to do, gave them some skills, some how-tos. He said, do this, 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 and this. Don't do this, this, and this. And then he sent out 70 of them. And he trained 70, but he discipled 12. Now, Jesus did all the methods, but he spent the maximum time on the most effective method. That's why he spent most of his time with those 12, because he was building into their lives. Now, you'll want to do the same thing. Just because you get involved in discipleship doesn't mean you drop everything else. No. You ought to be involved in mass communication. We ought to do preaching and teaching and training and all that. But we ought to spend our maximum amount of time doing the most effective method. Man-to-man, one-on-one training. So, you know, there's no lack of balance. You do them all. Jesus did them all. He just spent the maximum amount of time doing the most effective. So you don't drop everything else and just do discipleship. You use all the methods there are. But you center on training faithful men. All right? What is a faithful man? Well, I wish I had time to share this with you. But if you want to do a good study, you can look up the word faithful in your concordance, in an exhaustive concordance, and do a topical study of what is a faithful man, and study all the way through, and you'll get some interesting insights. But let me just share with you five things out of 2 Timothy. In this passage here, he's talking about characteristics of godly, faithful men. And first he says, "Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus." Now the quality he's talking about here is having a real heart for God. So that's the first quality, a heart for God. Is he strong in the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ? Does he really have a burning desire to grow? Does he have a heart for God? Okay? And then in verse 2, he talks about the quality of faithfulness. Commit to faithful men. That's the second quality you want to look for in a potential Timothy. Is he faithful? In other words, is he dependable? Is he reliable? Is he trustworthy? Can you depend on him to reproduce and share with others what you share with him? Is he faithful? Now, then Paul gives three allegories here, or illustrations. And the first one is a soldier. And he says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." All right, he says here, if you're going to be a soldier, you can't get all wrapped up in other things. You've got to be available for when the general calls. And that's the third quality you want to look for. Available. Is he available? You know, I've had lots of guys that in the last 8 or 9 years come up to me in different schools and say, "Listen, I hear that you're have a discipling ministry, and I'd sure like to get some training from you." I'd say, "Great, I'd be glad to share with you. I don't know very much, but what I know, I'll sure be glad to share with you." And they'll say, "Okay, great." And then they never contact me again. And then I'll see them maybe a few days later on campus and say, "Hey, why don't we get together?" "Well, I really don't have time this week." And then I'll see them next week and say, "Well, how about it?" "Well, finals are coming up." And it comes down to the basic thing that they're just not available. And if you're going to disciple somebody, you've got to spend a lot of time with them. So if somebody's not available, if they're not willing to make time to meet with you on a regular basis, don't waste your time trying to work with them. They've got to be available. Are they willing to schedule their time around some meetings that you can meet together for growth? Are they available? Don't waste your time on people who don't really want to put out the effort. Okay? So availability. And then the next verse tells us about the athlete. "And if a man strive for masteries, yet he is not crowned except that he strive lawfully." It's talking about an athlete here. And it says that an athlete's got to abide by the rules. You know? And he's got to be taught to abide by the rules, because if he doesn't abide by the rules, if he wins, it won't count. And so you've got to abide by the rules, and you've got to be teachable. So, that's the next quality. We've talked about available. We've talked about faithful, a heart for God. Available. Is that how you spell it? Available? I don't know. And then we said he's got to be teachable, like the athlete. The athlete's got to be taught to abide by the rules. And if he doesn't abide by the rules, he's not gonna work out. And you see, if you're going to train a Timothy, he's got to want to learn. I can't sit down with a guy, if he doesn't want to be taught, what do we meet for? I've sat down sometimes with guys, maybe on the first meeting, we'll go to a restaurant, and I'll say, "Hey, let's just get together for Bible study. Let's meet over at Denny's restaurant or something like that, and we'll eat and have coffee, and then we'll just discuss some of the Bible." So they say, "Great." So we meet with them, and I'll sit down, and boy, they just want to share and talk all the time and do all the talking, and finally I just have to say, "Now, hey, wait a minute. Now, if you want to just get together for discussion, that's fine. But if you want to have a Paul-Timothy relationship, you're going to have to just sort of slow down and let me share with you some of the things. Guy's not teachable. If he's headstrong, you really can't work with him. He's got to have that desire to grow. And then in verse 6, it's talking about the farmer. It says, the farmer that labors must be the first partaker of the fruits. Who has that in New American Standard? Farmer, is that what it says? Okay, what else does it, who else has another translation? Okay. Okay, the hardworking farmer. One translation says industrious. And that's a quality that you want to look for in a Timothy. Is he a hard worker? Is he willing to do the Bible studies? If you've got somebody who just wants to sit around and never really do any projects or memorize any verses or really do, you know, go out witnessing, you're not going to get very much accomplished. So, is he industrious? Is he industrious? And then there in verse 7, again it says, consider all these things and the Lord will give thee understanding in all things. Okay, so we've got five qualities here. It said heart for God, faithful, available, teachable, industrious. And I like to put them in this little acrostic so I can remember it. You put these five qualities like this, faithful, available, teachable, industrious. Oh, I got that backwards. Right there. And a teachable heart for God, what's it spell? Faith. Yeah. And that's the way I can remember it. I'm looking for a faithful man. Is he faithful, available, industrious, teachable, and a heart for God? Now, if a guy has those qualities in his life, boy, I latch on to him. And I've always got my spiritual antenna out whenever I, you know, am going around my church or something, looking for that type of man, a faithful man. And then I'll get with him and say, hey, how'd you like to just get together for a few months and do some Bible studies and learn more about the Christian life? I said, great. And then I can work with him. Now, what if a guy doesn't have all these? Well, if a guy only has to have one of them, the one that's most important is this one right here, a heart for God. Because if a guy really wants to grow and really wants to be close to Jesus, you can teach him to be faithful and available and all these other things. You can build those into his life. You can help him grow in those areas if he really wants to grow. But if he doesn't have a heart for God, you're going to have a hard time working with him in that kind of relationship. So there's a well-known saying that says, you love the world, you help many, and you train a few. And that's what your attitude ought to be. But maybe a guy doesn't have these qualities. Does that mean I just ignore him the rest of my life? No. You love everybody, and you help as many people as you can. But it's this kind of person that the Bible says that you're to disciple. Now, you can only disciple a faithful man if you are one. You've got to have it in your own life. And you've got to make sure that you are teachable, and that you have a heart for God, and that you're willing to put out the work. Because if you really get serious about discipling, it's going to cost. It's going to cost you some of your time. It's going to cost you some privacy. You know, having people over for dinner and just doing fun things together. See, in a Paul Timothy time, you ought to have a balance between what I just call fun time and then what I call man-to-man time. Fun time is when I just get together with my Timothy, and we just go do something, and I just get to know him, and we just share, and that's where a lot of problems just come up. We just be driving down the road. I rarely go anywhere alone, except on these long trips where I have to fly. Everywhere I go, I take a Timothy, because I want that additional time. Where did Jesus do most of his teaching? You know where he did it? Walking down the road, or eating, or relaxing. If you'll study it, it was usually in one of those three situations that Jesus did most of his teaching. And that can be, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I've got a real busy schedule. I'm going to seminary. I work in an organization. So you know what I eat with my Timothys? Meal times. Lunch times is an excellent time for me. Or breakfast. Sometimes I'll say, hey, let's meet at 7 o'clock for breakfast. We'll meet down here at Bob's Big Boy or whatever, you know, some kind of restaurant. And we'll eat together, share verses, and talk while we're eating, and then we'll get out the Bible and do a study together. So you need a balance between formal time when you meet once or twice a week, and then you need just occasional time where, you know, I hardly even go to the store without one of my Timothys. And I say, I call him and say, hey, I got to go downtown. You want to go down with me? Say, yeah. We'll pop in the car, and sometimes during that time, that's our most valuable teaching time. You know, I really think that this is one of the biggest areas that most pastors miss. I don't think a pastor should go anywhere without a layman. You know, when he does hospital visitation, he ought to have a layman with him at all times. And that layman ought to be going with him, watching that pastor, how he deals with people who are in sickness and crisis. And eventually, then the pastor can turn over part of those duties and share with him. Whenever the pastor goes visiting in the home, he ought to take a layman with him. And that guy can watch him and learn from him. And we learn by doing and watching. And then he can train that way and be reproducing. So take people with you and have a combination of formal time when you sit down for Bible studies, and then just a relaxing time where you just go out, shoot the bull, and just, you know, have a lot of fun. All right? Does anybody have any questions about that? Okay. All right, let me give you some tips now on how to select Timothy. Now, the most important phase in this whole discipleship process is during this recruitment phase. Because if you pick the wrong guy, you know, the chain gets broken and we don't multiply like we talk about. Now, there's a wrong way. For instance, I mainly deal with pastors. Our organization, International Evangelism, mainly teaches pastors the principles of discipleship, and then they do it in their church and train their laymen and go on and on. And, you know, I've had pastors who did the worst thing possible. What they'd do is they'd ask a guy to be a Timothy after praying. And then they'd stand up on Sunday morning and say, well, I've asked Joe Blow here, a key layman in our church, to be my Timothy for the next 50 years, you know, or something like that. And they'd go on. Now, that is wrong. That's the wrong way to do it for several reasons. Number one, it gives Joe a bunch of pride. He makes him think he's somebody special. Number two, if Joe isn't a faithful man and he cops out, you're stuck with him because you've made a public commitment. Don't make a big deal about discipleship. It's not something you have to go around and preach or advertise or promote. Just do it. Just go in your church and find a real teachable person who wants to learn more about the Lord and get them aside and say, hey, why don't we just start growing together? And you can check on me and I'll check on you, and we'll memorize some verses each month, each week, and we'll have a quiet time, and we'll share Bible stories, and we'll go witnessing together, and we'll just have a good time. And then just do it. You don't have to make a big deal out of it and, you know, cause a whole bunch of problems. Okay, here's what you do. The first thing is pray. Pray and ask God to show you the right person. It's really my conviction that God specifically brings people together, like we talked about last night. Now, in Jesus' ministry, that you'll find, how long did he pray before he picked his disciples? All night. He prayed all night before he chose those he would get to sign on. Well, I think that was obviously because they were the most important. You know, if they had copped out, we wouldn't be here. They spread the message. But pray and ask God to show you the right person. Number two, don't choose a Timothy too quickly. In other words, I would observe his life for a while. You don't find Jesus in a hurry to select his 12 in the Gospels. In fact, you'll find, if you study the Gospels, you'll find that he attracted a bunch of followers, and then he watched them for 6 months. And then after 6 months of time, then he chose the 12. He didn't just go out and say, hey, you look nice, come on. He watched their lives for about a half month. Now, a half a year, you don't need to go that long, because the fate of the world doesn't rest on you. But you might observe a guy for a few weeks. The word is going to go on whether you make disciples or not, because God's going to use other people. Don't choose a man too quickly. Take your time. Don't just run out and grab the first Timothy. Now, some people, they get excited, they go home, and, you know. And by the way, here's the third thing. Don't choose more than one, at least to start out with. I would think that the maximum that any person could ever have would be three at one time, three men or women that you're working with. I remember walking into church one day after we'd done a seminar, and some lady came up and piously said to me, oh, yes, I have my 13 disciples. Well, good night. Jesus could only handle 12, and he was perfect. you know? And he lived with them for 3.5 years. Now, if you want to live with them for 3.5 years and walk around with them, you know, and you think you've got it all together, well, you go ahead and try 12. But I would say just try one and work with that and pour your life into that person. At the most, at any one time, I think anybody could handle is about 3 in today's schedule. Number 3, you might want to start a small group and let the cream just sort of rise to the front, rise to the top. And it's a good way to select Timothys. One of the best ways to get a Timothy is in a Sunday school class. If you teach Sunday school, you might just be teaching there, and you'll find that one or two in the group really have that heart for God. They're hungering and thirsting after righteousness. They really want to grow. And you'll see, boy, he just sort of stands out above everybody else, or she does. And you can see, boy, she really, really is interested. That's the person you want to latch on to. And because they will then in turn be able to go and reach out, and eventually everybody can get reached. I know of a pastor who, in order to avoid jealousy, you know, he figured, well, Jesus discipled those who bore the maximum responsibility. He said, well, in our church, that's the deacons. But he didn't want to cause a bunch of jealousy, so he went in and he said this. He said, now, men, in the first place, he said, I want to apologize to you. He said, I've been here pastor for several years, and he said, I've made a mistake. Because Jesus spent his time with those who bear the maximum responsibility, and yet I've been spending my time with those who have the most problems. And the tragedy today is most pastors spend all their time with problem cases who have to be dealt with week after week after week instead of training the leadership who eventually could reach all those problem cases. He ought to be working with those deacons and training those leaders. And so he said, now men, I want you to meet among yourselves and select one person among yourselves that I will work with for the next 6 months. And then after that, he'll get a Timothy, and then you can choose another one among yourselves, and I'll work with him. Well, see, that was a perfect solution, because all the guys who didn't want to do it said, oh, no, you go ahead, you go first. And the guys who really wanted to do it said, well, I'll do it. And see, so it worked out, and there was no jealousy that way. Number five, whatever this is, choose a person that's in your regular pattern of life. In other words, somebody that you see fairly frequently. I have tried to disciple people who are in other cities, but it just doesn't work because you can't meet with them enough. You can't build the disciple by meeting 1 hour a week. You got to just spend time together. And you see, Christianity is a life. And for the person to really grow in Christianity, he's got to see me living it. He's got to even see me, you know, when I get mad at my wife and how I handle it. When I'm tired, and he ought to see me in times of joy and times of sadness, he's got to see how Christ flows through my life in all situations of life. So choose somebody who's fairly in your regular pattern of life, otherwise you won't get to be with them that much. And you'll not get very far in character if you don't see them in all sorts of situations. Another step is get to know him fairly well before asking him to commit himself. You might cultivate a friendship with him. Take him out to lunch and ask him to tell you about his testimony, his spiritual life, or his plans for the future, or what his goals are, or what Christ means to him. And just get a feel for his relationship with the Lord. Then the next thing you might want to do is ask him to pray about a trial period. You know, say, John, let's just pray and see if this is God's will, and see if God touches your heart and my heart about it, and ask him to pray about it. And then if he's sure, have him make sure that he knows it's God's will that you be together. Because if it isn't God's will, you won't stick together. If it is, that'll be the key that'll help you stick together when times get rough. Sometimes he'll feel like giving up, and you can remind him, now listen, John, you felt that this was God's will, and let's go ahead and do it. The next thing is take him on for a trial period. Now this way, he's not sure he's committing himself for an indefinite time, something he's not sure about. You know, if you walk up and say, hey, I want you to be my Timothy for the next year, well, the guy's going to say, he's going to be pretty hesitant about committing himself to something he doesn't even know what it is. So just say, hey, let's get together for a few weeks. And it gives you a chance to see if he's a faithful man. It gives him a chance to see if this is really what he wants to study and do. And it just works out to see if your personalities mesh together. So make a short-term commitment. Next thing is enlist him to a worldwide cause, not just a program. Enlist him to a worldwide cause, not just a program. Help him to realize that this whole matter of disciple-making is just helping fulfill a great commission. He's not just committing himself to you. He's really committing himself to Christ to become a disciple and to become what God wants him to be. And challenge him with a big vision. Enlist him to world evangelism. Enlist him to really giving his life for the things that count. You know, we're in a battle for the souls of men. And show him the big picture. Number 9 or 10, whatever it is, set and explain in your first meeting some definite expectations or requirements. So, you know, just at the very start, I found it really helpful to say, okay, John, what would you like to study in this time together? What would you like to do? And find out what he expects from you as a Paul, and then you can share with him what you expect from him. Now, here's a little thing that's very important. Never lower your standards to attract a person. If you really believe that it's important to memorize a couple verses a week, don't lower that standard. You'll never get quality people by lowering your standard. You know, this is not something forced. We're not talking about something that's, you know, a dictator thing. We're talking about a voluntary relationship between two people who want to help each other grow. So don't ever lower your standard, you know, by doing it. In Jesus' ministry, he never did that. In fact, he did exactly the opposite. Every time the crowds got big, he'd turn around and give them a hard saying. Every time the crowd started to get big, he'd turn around and say, now, if you want to follow me, you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And they'd say, ugh. You know, and say, what in the world does he mean there? And then the crowd started to get big again. He'd turn around and say, if you want to follow me, you've got to hate your mother and father and sister and brother and, you know. He continually made it harder and harder and harder to follow him because he wanted the best. So don't lower your standards to attract another person. Now, here's another thing. Never set a standard for others that you're not willing to meet yourself. If you're not willing to have a regular quiet time, don't require that of somebody else. If you're not willing to memorize scripture verses, don't require it of somebody else. If you're not willing to witness, don't require that of somebody else. So, in that first meeting, I sit down and I've already asked them in advance to make a list and write out these things. And these are the four questions we cover in our first meeting. What do you expect from me? And what can I expect from you? And I have my Timothy share those two things. Okay, what do you expect from me? And what can I expect from you? Okay, and then I share these two things. What I expect from you is what I share. What I expect from you. And number four, what you can expect from me. And I tell them, you know, I'll pray for you every day. I'll be available. If you need help any time of the day, you can call me. I'm going to be your prayer partner. You know, I'm going to love you and really commit myself to you. To help. I always tell my family, I say, my goal is to help you be successful in life. I'm committing myself to your success. You see, I don't tell people, hey, come join my ministry. My goal is to help them have a successful ministry of their own. That's the servant attitude. That's what Christ did. He didn't come to be a minister too, but to be a minister. Okay, so the time to spell out all the things are right at the front, so you don't be vague about it. And then the last thing is have a positive attitude when you're recruiting your Timothy. Have a positive attitude when recruiting your Timothy. Be excited, you know, about the possibilities in his life. And give him a vision of what God can do and what God wants to do in his life. And motivate him by sharing your vision with him. All right? After you've recruited a Timothy, you've found somebody, you've been praying, you really feel God's led you to this person. All right, there are two parts. Remember, sometimes you just get together just to have fun and to relax and just to get to know each other. And that's where you really counsel and share and just really share your life. And then there's structured time. That's when you meet regularly, at least once a week, with your Timothy for Bible study. Now, in this, you say, what do I do with a Timothy when I get him and we have our weekly meeting together? All right, there, the things that you do, you can remember it by this word. It's in a little acrostic that I made up that'll help you remember it. Share. Just write down the word share. Now, that'll be easy to remember. You want to share with your Timothy. You want to share with your disciple. And these are the five things that I try to do with my Timothy every time we meet together in a formal, you know, whether we meet for Thursday at lunch or whether we meet for Monday for breakfast or whatever. I try to do these five things with my Timothy. The first thing I do is S, study the Word. Study the Word. I always do some kind of Bible study together. Now, you can use a Bible study booklet, a fill-in booklet. You can use a study guide. You can write your own Bible studies. You can even use some old lessons out of Sunday school. It really doesn't matter, just as long as it's meeting his needs. Study the Word together. Okay? And then, number two, help him with a practical need. I always try to think of something practical that I can help my Timothy with. For instance, my wife. One day, one of the girls that she was discipling was a high school girl, and this girl didn't have her driver's license. So my wife took her out and taught her how to drive. And, you know, her mom didn't have time or anything, so she took her out and taught her how to drive. That's just a practical application. You know, I've helped guys, you know, with work that they had to do. I just help them. I just show that I'm really interested in more than just their spiritual life. And then A stands for assign a project or some homework. I try to think of a little project that they can work on during the next week. Now, that may be a Bible study to do on their own. It may be somebody to witness to. It may be a character project. It may be, any number of things. It may be a tape to listen to or a book to read or a letter to write. You know, one time I was working with a guy and we were working on the quality of gratefulness. And he said, you know, I'm not grateful enough for all that God has done for me. So my project for the week was, I want you to go and I want you to write five letters to people who have helped you in life. And I want you to write them and tell them that you're grateful to them and why. So he went, he wrote a letter to his parents. He wrote one to some school teacher that helped him in the third grade. You know, he just wrote that was just a little project for gratefulness. And you can think of different projects to help grow in different areas. So study the Word together, help him with a practical need, assign a project. Then the fourth thing I want to do is review. Review. That's where I check up on the project he did the week before. I say, okay, let me see that Bible study you did. Or did you listen to that tape? Or I always ask him, what are the memory verses you worked this week, you memorized? And in the guys that I work with, I require them that they memorize two verses a week. Because that just helps. That's about 104 verses a year. And then they're capable of reviewing that. So we'll review memory verses. Now he'll share ones he's been working on. I'll share ones I've been working on. And we just review the project. And then the last thing I do is encourage with prayer. We always spend the last part of our time together in just a little prayer time, prayer meeting together. And I pray with him, and I pray for him. And I let him know that I'm praying with him. And I'll write down prayer requests. I'll say, okay, Tom, what do you want me to pray for you this week? And he'll say, well, I'm having a hard time here, so we'll pray here. And then I'll share with him some prayer requests of my own. And I'll pray, and we'll pray together, and then I'll pray for him during the week. So those are five things that you can do with your Timothy and in your regular scheduled man-to-man time. Okay, our time's about up, so let me just ask if you have any kind of question or anything. Okay?
When you study the Word, do you come prepared to teach something, or do you ask them to have anything they want to learn, and then I can look it up right there.
Okay. We alternate. Sometimes I'll have a study that's prepared, and I'll come and I'll bring it, and I'll say, you know, I just want to share with you this week some stuff I've been learning about temptation. Okay? And so we'll study that. Sometimes I'll let him share a study. You know, I've assigned him a project, and then the next week he'll come back and I'll say, okay, let me see what you've done. And then he'll share it and we'll discuss it. Sometimes I've used a book, you know, like a fill-in book, like The Godly Man or The Godly Woman, where you fill in and then come back and share answers and then discuss that way. Sometimes we just get together and I'll have already thought it out in advance. Like, for instance, one time my Timothy asked me about how to know God's will. And so I had previously done a study on it, but I told him, I said, next week I want you to bring your concordance. And we came together and we sat down there and we looked up the word will in the Bible, God's will, His will of the Lord, will of God. And we looked up all those verses and did a study together. Sometimes I'll teach him a Bible study method, like some of the ones I shared with you the last time I was up here. And I'll teach him a Bible study method and we'll practice it together during that time. So it'll just, you know, you alternate. Yeah?
How long do you usually meet with the guy?
Hour, sometimes an hour and a half, sometimes a little longer, you know. Usually schedule-wise, I found that like lunchtime is a real good time when people are real busy, so we can meet for lunch. So we usually schedule for lunchtime, and that lasts about an hour, 15 minutes. And what we'll do is while we're eating, we'll cover review, and we'll cover practical need. We'll just talk about it. And test them on verses and stuff like that. And then after we've got the meal finished, then we'll set aside all the food, you know, get all the dishes off the table and pull out the Bibles and sit there. And, you know, I've even had some restaurants that, you know, they just know that I'm going to be there Thursday at noon. And, you know, they even reserve this booth for me because we always go to the one in the back corner where it's nice and quiet. And, you know, they don't know what's going on, but they just know that somebody's studying the Bible there. And the waitresses are real nice because they get to know you and they know, well, Rick's going to be here. You know, it's 5 to 12. He ought to be walking in now. And we'll walk in. They'll get the menu to us real quick. We order, you know, and so we don't waste a whole lot of time. And then they come and take the dishes away fast. And you know, it's got to the point where they just know. And so they don't put other people back there by us or anything like that. And we've got a whole section of a little restaurant to ourselves. By the way, that's a good way to see if a guy is available. If he really means business, say you might want to say, well, listen, for our first time, let's meet at 5:30 tomorrow morning. And, you know, if a guy's really serious or something like that, he'll show up. You know, now I don't suggest you get up at 5:30 every morning. Now, some of you guys wouldn't be very faithful men if we did that. Okay? Any other, yeah. Okay, if Timothy does not do an assignment, let's say I've assigned him, would you fill out chapter 4 in this Bible study guide and come back next week? Well, I'll just tell him, I'll say, well, Tom, I'll let you know I'm really disappointed in you. You know, why was it that you didn't get it done? Sometimes it's a valid reason, you know, he just didn't get it done. He's snowed under, you know, his mother died or something, and, you know. And I said, well, you should have done it anyway. No. you know, you can be lenient. But if a guy is habitually late, sometimes I will make our meeting dependent on that. I'll say, well, look, John, you haven't finished this for 2 weeks, so I think it would be best if we not meet again until you get it finished. You see, and then there's no use wasting your time if he isn't industrious, like we were talking about, really. So, and sometimes they'll just wait. And you just wait them out until they finally get it finished, and then they'll come and do it.
How do you handle that in a group situation?
Well, see, I don't try to require accountability in a group. Now, you could if you lay it out all at the start, it's easy to do. When you start a group, a small group, and say, okay, let's make sure one of the conditions is you have it prepared. Now, my wife has been a member of a class in our church in Sunday school taught by the pastor's wife where she makes it a condition that if you don't study your lesson when you come to Sunday school, you don't talk. She said, now, you know, we'll appreciate you can come and want to and sit in, but if you haven't studied, you really don't have anything to say. And we'll just ask you to just be quiet and let those girls who have studied go ahead and take part in the discussion. And so everybody studies so they can talk. Because it's pretty hard for you to sit there week after week, you know, and everybody else is getting a share, and you're not getting to share anything because you haven't studied. And so, you know, you might want to do something like that in a group.
When you're trying to discern, when you're praying about what to share with God, uh-huh. in your study of the Word, you're going to have a topic to say each week, you're going to have a certain thing. Well, initially, sure, you're going to share the follow-up things, but then try to get through those more or less in some sort of order,
uh-huh.
a basis down. But then, like, would you spend a semester just, like, sitting on, like, three things out of the whole gamut of the rest of the things available you can share with them, just sitting on like three things that are really felt need? Or would you try to keep on every week or two moving to a different thing to get him brought?
No, I keep moving to give him lots of balance. Now some things are going to have to be repeated, you know, some areas. Like you might cover quiet time and he understands how to do it, but 6 weeks later he may drop it off. He may need to come back and get some reinforcement and cover it. What would be a good idea for you to do is to get together with your BSU group and sit down and just make a list of what are all of the topics. If I wanted to learn everything there was about the Christian life, what would I like to know about? And then I've made a list. In fact, I've got a list in here of about 65 or 70 things that I like to cover with a Timothy. Okay? And then I've got this list, and then that's what I base my own personal Bible study on. I do studies on those areas. So then when my Timothy comes along and says, boy, you know, I'm really having a hard time with the discouragement, I can say, oh, well, I just happen to have a study on that. Why don't next week let's get together and I'll share it with you. And we can do that. And you'll develop. That's the advantage of a notebook. See, I've got 8 years worth of studies. Well, not just in this one here, but in others. In here. So anywhere I can go, if a Timothy says, boy, I'm having a real hard problem with my dating life, I flip over here to dating. And I've got two studies on Christian dating. You know, a guy says, boy, I'm having a hard time. But how do you really trust God in faith? I flip over here. I've got two or three studies on faith. And I build my notebook that way. Now, here's how I do it. It's what I call the shoebox method. It's not copyrighted by me or anything, so you can use it. What I did is I just took a bunch of shoeboxes and Bible boxes, and I take sermon notes everywhere I go. But, you know, a sermon note, just the way it is, really doesn't do you that much good because you're not going to use it in that form. You're not going to go out and preach somebody else a sermon, I hope. And, you know, well, if it's real good, you can go ahead and share it. You know, anything I've shared with you, go ahead and share, you know. If my bullet fits your gun, shoot it, you know. So, you know, you can kill a stick, you can kill a snake with a crooked stick or a big stick or all kinds of sticks. Just kill it. And so use whatever works. You know, like they say, if you borrow from one person, that's plagiarism. If you borrow from several people, that's research. So if you want to research from me, that's okay. What were we talking about? I don't even know. Oh, shoebox method, yeah. So what I do is, you know, very rarely is there a whole sermon that I'm completely satisfied with. So when I get home, I take out my scissors and I cut it up. You know, there might be a good quote here and I throw it over in this box. A good quote here and I throw it in. You can use file folders too. You don't have to have shoe boxes. You know? And every time, what I'll do is I made a list and I took a bunch of files and I made one file on temptation and I made one file on knowing God's will and I made another file on the quiet time and I made another file on spiritual notebook and another file on prayer, like that. And then every time I hear anything on temptation, I throw it in that file. Anytime, a good quote, a good illustration, I get a quiet time insight, I hear a tape, whatever, I throw it in there. If I read something in a book, I'll write page 82 of this book, and I'll drop it in that file. Okay, and then I'm constantly collecting materials. So then, when my Timothy comes along and says, Rick, would you help me get victory over temptation? I said, okay, I sure would. Give me a couple weeks or a week. I go home, I get that file, all that material, I put it all together in a logical form that I can pass on, and then I share it with him. And that way, see, most of these studies, when I've got a study, my Timothy will say, well, boy, how did you get that much material in 1 week? That's really deep. Well, I say, one thing you haven't realized, I've been preparing this study for 2 years. You see, I've been collecting insights and ideas and things like that. And so your whole life will be a lifetime. Now, you're going to get better and better at disciple-making. Your first Timothy, you'll do okay with. You won't do great because you don't know that much. But you're going to learn by experience. And you're going to develop a backlog of Bible studies to share that talk about every area of life. And see, the thing is, you guys are young. And by the time you get to be 40, 50, 60 years old, you're going to be such an expert disciple maker, it's going to be exciting. You see, I work with pastors most of the time. And I see guys who are 5 years away from retirement. And they're saying, why didn't I know this 50 years ago? And it's tragic. But, you know, because here they've gone all through life and they're saying, why didn't I know this 50 years ago when I was first starting my church? But you guys are young enough, you got 20 years to develop. And then you got 40 more years of maximum service. If you'll keep notebooks and if you'll study and be logical in your, you know, form, and then you can share. And then you'll just develop studies for different kinds of needs. Okay, any other questions?
Oh, yeah, I had one. He talked about a trial period for your Timothy, you know. And I was also thinking back to where you first set up some guidelines that you wanted to go by, you know, and tell your Timothy about.
Uh-huh.
Now, if it's a trial period, should you be as strict on them as you normally would?
Yeah, I would. Because then that way they'll see if they you know, want to be part of it or not. There are just some people that you won't be able to disciple. Some other people can and you can't. Now, turn to Luke 16. In the trial period, you want to find out if this person is a faithful man, because the Bible says that you're to invest your life in faithful men. Okay, in Luke 16, verses 10 to 13, I found this one day in a Bible study that I was doing with my Timothy. One day, a Timothy came to me, and he said, Rick, I know I'm supposed to invest in a faithful man. What is a faithful man? So we sat down, we did a Bible study on what is a faithful man, and we found these verses. And these verses list the four ways to test a man's faithfulness. Now, you can test him these four ways during the trial period. Verse 10, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in least is unjust also in much. The first thing, first way to test a man's faithfulness is to test him in the little things. Test him in little bitty things. Sometimes they're not even, you know, they're not even spiritual. Like I'll say, hey Tom, I'm leading a Bible study tonight down at the church. I'd appreciate it if you'd get down there about 30 minutes in advance and set up the chairs, okay? See, let's just see if he's really, you know, dependable. Is he a dependable person? That doesn't have anything. He thinks, oh, that's not spiritual. But you test him in little things before giving him big things. Okay, the next test is verse 11. If therefore you have not been faithful in unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? It says there, if you're not faithful in unrighteous mammon, what's that? Money. Who will trust you true riches or spiritual truth? That says there that if God can't trust you in non-spiritual matters, he won't trust you with spiritual truth, riches. So, the second test him in non-spiritual matters before giving him spiritual truth. Is he dependable? Will he value what you give him? Remember, don't cast your pearls. Don't give that to the dogs, that which is holy. So test him in non-spiritual matters, you know, ask him to do something. Okay, verse 12, the third way to test. And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, another man, who will give you that which is your own? Here's a divine principle, I think. It says you test him in how he handles that which isn't his before you give him his own. Now, I think this is true about a ministry. I think that God wants every Christian to have a ministry.